presentation of Hub City Radio Sports. Welcome to the Sports Hub. Fox Sports Aberdeen, 1420 AM and 98.5 FM proudly presents Northeast South Dakota's leader in sports talk and sports coverage. Co-hosts David Tewksbury and Matt McClure have you covered on all things area sports. They'll talk with local coaches.
We have it so good, and I hope that Wolves Country knows just how big a difference they make, because they turned the Pentagon into Walks Arena. There's absolutely nothing like you, and so thank you doesn't seem like enough, but it's all I got today.
We said after the win last week, we set a new standard for how we play at Northern State, and we will never go back. And they responded. Our guys responded today. What a performance.
They'll sit down with local student athletes.
I've always said Coach Schmidt and Coach Glasgow took a big chance on me out of high school. You know, I was only 170 pounds. Showed up, I had blonde hair, dangly earrings, a lot of jewelry, and I was 17 when I first got up here for the first couple weeks. I was super nervous, and now with a year under my belt, a spring under my belt, everything's just slowed down. I'm seeing the ball, I'm seeing the receivers, everything slowed down. I'm really grateful. The coaches took a chance on me.
We're a great team, too. Like, we can beat anybody. We haven't been scared in the past, but I don't know. We can beat anybody. Like, we can show up on any day and beat anybody in the NSIC. That's what we learned today.
Plus, they'll visit with local media members and talk all things sports in South Dakota and the region.
Dude, you have no idea what you're talking about right now.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Take a look in the mirror, pal.
Let's go!
A very happy Monday to you. This is the Sports Hub on Fox Sports Aberdeen. 1420 on the AM dial, 98.5 on the FM dial, and online at hubcityradio.com. Live streaming with the video as well on the Fox Sports Aberdeen Facebook page. The boys are back in studio. I am David Tewksbury, joined alongside by the Cobra, Matt McClure. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing good. How was your vacation, man?
It was outstanding. It really, really was. And if you are watching on the live stream right now, you can see my face is a little bit red. Mm. Definitely got a lot of sun.
You look tan.
Yeah, I burn, you know. I think it's, I don't know if it's tan. I think it's, you got to get the base burn for me first. But definitely my Saturday was filled with just picking weeds, because we came back and it's just weed city in the front yard. So I'm out there like a jerk on my hands and knees picking weeds. Again, I've got the hand injury and what have you here.
Look at that blister. I know, it's nasty. It's
just brutal. So that was my Saturday. A lot of time outdoors. But it was nice spending time with my mom and my dad and my obviously my wife and two kids and my mother-in-law and father-in-law. So we had a whole family vacation there in Holland, Michigan, and checked out the flowers. I actually even went to the Hope campus. My wife went to Hope College, so check that out. Had some great food, some great laughs, and a lot of fun.
Saw some pictures there on your social. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I really didn't post a lot of pictures of the trip on social media. Not a lot, but a little bit of them. And yeah, the tulip time is like the can't miss thing. That's what it is.
Okay.
So it's basically 6 million tulips are planted around Holland, Michigan, and you check it all out. It's beautiful. Problem is, the day before we got there, we had there was a hard frost in Holland, Michigan, so a couple of the rows of the tulips were, you know, kind of burned off. But you know, it was a good time though. Overall.
Yeah, that's great. Great to have you back.
Absolutely glad to be back and sleeping in my own bed. And it was nice though. I think we all need time like that. I don't care if you're a doctor, dentist, lawyer, radio guy. Like, we all need time to just decompress a couple times of the year. And I was glad that you had that opportunity. And you got to get a couple of those under your belt this summer too, right?
Yeah, I think I'm going to Pittsburgh next month to catch a couple Pirates games.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that there. Checking out Pittsburgh, a couple friends. I don't know exactly the time, but I think it's in June sometime. So I'm looking forward to that. And like you said, man, like getting away and, you know, after the seasons that we have, especially in the winter when you're on the road, it seems like every other night and every other weekend, you know, to have those kinds of weeks where you can just kind of take your mind off everything and just kind of be present in the moment during the summer. It's spring and summer. It's certainly a good time of the year for that.
I didn't even bring my laptop with me. For the first time ever on a vacation, I didn't even bring my work laptop. I said, to hell with this thing. I'm leaving that thing at home, and I'm going on vacation. Out of office email. I'll see you guys when I see you. So it was good, and certainly glad to be back. That's for sure. The Cobra is present. And we go ahead and toss this thing skyward here on Fox Sports Aberdeen, and looking forward to a bit of a potpourri discussion with Jay Kleinconnect. He is our news director, kind of a do-it-all sort of guy, and he'll be joining us towards the bottom of the hour. He's, of course, one of the voices of the Brown County Speedway, so he'll be over here right around 10:30, talk some wings as well. They have a pivotal Game 5 tonight, and we're going to talk about that at much, much length coming up later on in the program, plus a loaded weekend that was in terms of high school track and field. You also had some softball action, baseball, Brown County Speedway results. We'll get to all of that coming up later on in the program here today on FSA. But of course, you know me, and you're kind of in the same boat. Not quite the sicko that I am with the NFL, but you're probably a close second. And of course, this week we get the NFL schedule release that's coming up on Thursday. I'm looking forward to that. I know you are as well, because we are two peas in a pod. We do love our NFL football. And you sent me something this morning. I said, yep, that's jump material. No question about it. As the Cowboys will be taking on the Giants on Sunday Night Football Week 1 that just dropped here this morning. And you're like, come on, do we have to do this again? I thought to myself the exact same thing. The Giants and Cowboys will now face each other in Week 1 for the 8th time in the last 15 years. And I thought to myself, didn't they just do this to open the season on Sunday Night Football? I actually had to go back a couple years. 2023. So the NFL's like, hey, it's been 3 years. We got to get this thing going. Week 1 on Sunday Night Football again. But again, it's like that line in Mean Girls. Stop trying to make fetch happen.
Yep.
Cowboys, Giants. I know they're
mediocre.
I know they're big markets. I get all that. I know there's going to be eyeballs on it. It's the NFL. There's always going to be eyeballs on it. But nobody, I shouldn't say nobody cares. A lot of people, the vast majority of America, we don't really care anymore.
I agree. And the last time these two teams played on Sunday Night Football, you know what the score was?
40-0. Yeah.
There in New York. It was a wet night, and the Giants played horrible. And I guess they got to get this game in, because when these two teams play later on in the year, it's usually with zero significance because they're both out of the playoffs. So I think the NFL's like, hey, we got to get this thing in Week 1 because it's actually going to be a little bit more competitive or mean a little bit more than when they play in Week 16 and both teams are under 500. So I'm not a fan of it. We saw it already. Every time the Cowboys and Giants play, the Cowboys beat up on them. It's just how it is. Now, it could be different with John Harbaugh there, and they kind of get different cultures. So I'm looking forward to see how the Giants do as a team next year. But Week 1, Cowboys-Giants, I'll watch it, of course. But I think we could have done better for Week 1.
I think we could have done better. So we'll have to wait and see what the rest of the slate looks like. By the way, of course, the NFL will open up this year on a Wednesday. Seahawks are going to take on, we'll have to wait and see who that's going to be. But I think Game 2 is going to be that Thursday night or Friday between the Rams and 49ers. That's in Australia. We talked about that, I think, a couple months ago. But again, that's a division. These are division games that are being outsourced to Australia. I mean, like that could be a potential playoff game.
Yep.
And it's like, we're having that Week 1. Why? I can understand having that in L.A. or San Francisco or Santa Clara, I guess. But I don't know.
Week 1, last year, they had a game in Brazil.
Yeah.
This is Week 1. This isn't Week 7 when you're kind of in the middle of it. And obviously, they have those games every year in, what was it, where they got the games at? England, it seems like, every year.
Germany, England.
Yeah, so I'm cool with that a little bit later on in the year. This is Week 1. Why does it got to be in Australia Week 1? I don't get it. And like you said, division games against two pretty good teams in the NFC West. Doesn't make sense.
Hey, man, you want to put the Browns and Cardinals there? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Have at it. But this is like two premier teams in a division that's the best in football. Unnecessary. While I was on vacation, I did check out a little bit of Twitter and social media. Not a lot of it, but I did jump on from time to time. And I thought to myself, oh, that's jump material. I liked it. Immediately I said, we got to talk about this. Angelo State, okay, Angelo State University, they're a Division II baseball team. Well, they're a Division II team, but they had their baseball team played St. Mary's. And Angelo State comes away with a 3-2 win while being out-hit 8-0. That's right. Angelo State beat St. Mary's 3-2. They got no hit, 8-0. Problem was St. Mary's had 5 errors in the field, and I don't think I've ever seen a box score like that before.
No.
8-0. And the team that has the 8 hits loses to the team that has 0. That's bananas.
And that's got to drive the coach wild right there. You get 5 errors in the field, and I feel like St. Mary's, is that the team who lost that game, St. Mary's?
That's right.
I feel like they're thinking to themselves, hey, we literally have to just throw the ball to our team and not throw it all around the infield and outfield, and we got a chance to win that game. And if you're Angelo State, you stole one, and hey, just put the ball in play, see what happens. But that has got to drive a coach mad when you're just watching that and it's air after air after air. I'm sure there was a couple walks sprinkled in there. That's a tough way to lose. I don't think I've ever seen a box score like that.
How angry would you be if you're the pitcher? You've got your A stuff.
Yeah.
Your slider is just dynamite. Your cutter is just bending these guys' knees. Your fastball, you're blowing it past everybody. You are unhittable, literally unhittable, and your guys in the field can't figure it out? Oh, I'd be so angry.
I think the coach should, you know, usually you get like the game ball. Hey, here's a no-hitter game ball.
Yeah.
He'll probably be the only guy who got a game ball. Hey, he puts the date, whatever that date was, 5/8/26, no-hitter, loss 3-2.
Yeah, parentheses, loss. Unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. All right, looking forward to a couple other things here on tap in the not-too-distant future. Mark your calendars for Sunday, November the 15th, Boise State and Nebraska. Men's basketball down south at the Sanford Pentagon. So that'll be making its way here to the Mount Rushmore State. Obviously, the W, they had their game here a couple weeks ago. That was very well attended. And it seems to me that there's a game or two every year, a big Division I men's game that's played there at the Sanford Pentagon. Just a great place to watch a game in Nebraska and Boise State. Check that out.
Oh, yeah. And Nebraska, a team that went to the NCAA tournament last year. By the way, I talked about it on Friday. The official expansion went through to 75.
It's green.
It's green. But anyway, a team in Nebraska that went to the Sweet 16 last year. So you're going to see a good program there, or at least a program coming up on the rise. Boise State out of the Mountain West, they've made the tournament a time or two. So that'll be a fun one there at the Pentagon.
Sunday, November the 15th. And some sad news coming out in Major League Baseball. Of course, this happened this last week, as legendary New York Yankees radio play-by-play man John Sterling, he passed away.
Mm.
And, of course, you know, he's the soundtrack for a lot of Yankees fans, and great cuts, and Aaron Judge going yard, and Aaron Boone, and Derek Jeter. You know, the whole list goes on and on. But this is one thing that I thought was absolutely insane to me, and I don't know if this, you know, we talk about incredible numbers that'll never be replicated or duplicated. This has got to be up there. At one point in time, John Sterling called 5,060 consecutive games.
Wow.
From September 1989 through July of 2019. You want to talk about baseball being an Ironman sport? You know, if you're a broadcaster, a play-by-play guy, you get a little hoarse, you know, you come down with the flu one night, whatever. 5,060 consecutive games broadcast is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and John Sterling, baseball will certainly miss him. I actually talked about that last week on the show. I played his last ever home run call, which was a World Series home run. Giancarlo Stanton hit one opposite way in the World Series. That was his final home run call. And towards the end there, he was kind of part-time. Like his last season, he started the year and then retired. Remember they gave him a TV?
Yeah.
And we talked about that. It was just like random, like a TV. The guy's in
Utah. Go to Costco now. Yeah.
So, baseball lost a legend there with John Sterling. And I'm not a Yankees fan. And, you know, my dad would always try to get the fan on because that's where the home of the Yankees. And we were just outside the listening area. But he was a sicko and trying to get, like, the perfect, like, it was 6:60 a.m. And sometimes when we were driving certain ways or certain areas, we'd get it. And we'd, you know, listen to Yankees games a couple times. But baseball lost a couple legends in the past week. Bobby Cox, Atlanta Braves legendary manager, he passed away too. So a tough week for baseball when you're talking about legends of the sport. John Sterling and Bobby Cox. But, I mean, baseball will certainly miss John Sterling. And, one of the best broadcasters of all time in baseball. When you think of baseball and you think of the best broadcasters in baseball, his name will be there for time to come.
No question about it. Coming up next around these parts, we're talking some more local stuff. A loaded weekend that was in high school track and field. Had some tennis action, the Yankton invite. Not necessarily Aberdeen Central's best. What do you know? The girls' golf team at Aberdeen Central, they are human. They didn't finish in first place. But they did have a medalist there. We'll talk about that and much, much more. Plus, Jay Klein Connect, he'll be joining us towards the bottom of the hour. A little potpourri, a little wings hockey, and also some Brown County Speedway. All of that in about 15 minutes here on Fox Sports Aberdeen. Sports Hub continues on FSA. Glad to be with you back in studio on a marvelous Monday. Check us out there on the Fox Sports Aberdeen Facebook page. You want to follow us on X, you can do so. Just don't do so in person. We call that stalking. At Fox Sports 1420 AM, at the underscore Cobra 66, and at David Tewksbury for yours truly. I mean, if you just want to follow us around, that's a little weird.
Yeah, it is a bit weird, but definitely follow the Facebook page.
Got a lot of stuff there.
No question. And share. And share the stream, please.
Absolutely. Okay, so a loaded weekend of high school action. Let's go ahead and get to some of the Aberdeen Central news and notes. You had the Al Solly Invitational there on Friday night. Just a picture-perfect night for action there at Aberdeen Central. And on the boys' side of things, Carter Lust, he would partake in the 100 and 200-meter runs, and he would finish in the green there. It was a photo finish there, I think, in the 100. And congratulations to Carter Lust. He is your medalist, if you will, in the 100 and 200. Jack Birch, he is going to Northern State University for football. He won in the discus. And also of note, here I had this as a Webster athlete and Northern State football commit Matthew Mount. He would win in the shot put as well as the javelin. Maya Arampatsis for the Central Girls, she would win the 100-meter hurdles. And surprise, surprise, Taryn Hermanson again wins the shot put there for the Golden Eagles. She would place third in the discus. A lot of really good news and notes. Check it all there on our website, hubcityradio.com, or on the Fox Sports Aberdeen Facebook page there, like you mentioned. But a really good night there for the Golden Eagles there at the Al Solly Invite.
I'll tell you what, Carter Lust, that dude's quick, man. I just remember when he was a sophomore at Aberdeen Central, they'd give him the ball and, like, those jet sweeps.
Yeah, yeah.
He was so fast. So you got to think, like, those 100-meter, 200-meters, he can just cook there, and he certainly did that. Jack Birch, as you mentioned, he's really had a quietly – I mean, maybe not quiet, but just you look at the stats every time, and he is just dominating the discus right now with what he's doing there. And, of course, Taryn Hermanson. I mean, eat, sleep, Taryn Hermanson in first place in the shot put. It's just what she does. And you mentioned Matthew Mount as well. This guy, he watching him a little bit more up close and personal, I saw him at the B-103 All-Star game, and, of course, when Ron Colley played Webster, he's built like a Mack truck, man. I mean, he is a good athlete, strong, and he, you know, he, I think he could, you know, make a difference when he comes to NSU. Just he's an athlete, and he played like he kind of went on the basketball court. He played like he did in football. He's a physical dude, so not surprised to see this kid winning the shot put. I mean, and the fact that he's winning the javelin, too, just kind of goes to show what kind of athlete we're dealing with here in Matthew Bout.
I shouldn't make this comparison because it's probably unfair. Two completely different players and styles. But it's interesting whenever a team from a little bit further west comes east for the B and plays basketball. But you see them on Friday nights on the gridiron and you say, boy, you know, this guy's going to be a really good basketball player. Like Damon Wilkinson, who turns out to be – actually, I'm going to play – or. Not Damon Wilkinson, but the other Wilkinson.
Grant?
Grant Wilkinson. That's going to be playing football. Or is it Grant that's... No, Damon plays at SDSU now. I think they both play... No. I always get these two mixed up, because Damon plays basketball at SDSU.
Yeah. Is Grant's the one that plays at DeSmet now?
Right.
Is and there another one?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of them. Feels like there's like nine Wilkinsons.
Okay.
But Damon, of course, just transferring out of SDSU to play somewhere else. I haven't seen if he's committed somewhere else. Have you?
Not yet.
I've seen a couple of like whisperings and grumblings, but nothing concrete. And but Damon, great basketball player, but he's going to play football. I think of one of the Lamb kids out from Sully Buttes that played just a power forward, just a big hoss. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, this guy's going to be a really good basketball player. Then he goes down to Augie and plays football on the defensive line. It's just like, man, you see these great athletes that are just so good in that sport, and you're like, wow. They're going to be a great so-and-so at the NAIA level or D2. Then they end up playing a different sport.
How about Kessler?
Yeah.
For Castlewood.
Absolutely.
He's playing football, right,
mm-hmm.
in college.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're looking at him. We're like, hey, this dude's an insane basketball player. He's even better at football. He's another example. There's a ton of them out here in South Dakota.
There really is. There really is a lot. And I believe Mount is a three-sport athlete, football, basketball, track, and field. I don't know if he plays something else.
He played baseball, too.
Sure,
back
okay.
Then.
Sure.
I don't think he plays baseball now, obviously, because SBW is not. And we talked to Coach Nelson,
yeah.
Who, by the way, they're undefeated.
14-0.
Thanks. You can thank us, Coach, for that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he did play baseball as well, and then obviously moved on to track and field. So pretty crazy.
There you go, Coach. You can send us a fruit basket. We'll eat it live here on the air. But yes, very, very good stuff there for Aberdeen Central there on Friday night for the Al Solly Invitational. You also had the Bank North Twilight meet there as well on Friday, and a lot of good stuff for the Aberdeen Roncalli boys and girls. For the Roncalli boys, they would finish in first place, followed by second place Frederick Warner in third. Christian would finish in fourth place, followed by Hitchcock Tulare, rounding out the top five. Some individual highlights for the Cavaliers include Evan Hansen winning in the 800-meter run, Cole Feikert winning in the 1,600-meter run, and Brock Bowman winning in the javelin there. Good stuff there for the Aberdeen Roncalli boys. And for the girls, you had Warner finish in first place, followed by second place Roncalli, Hitchcock Tulare in third, Aberdeen Christian in fourth, and Hoven in fifth place. And a couple of interesting news and notes here for the Cavaliers include Hazel Kanigeter winning in the 400-meter run, Addison Cassidy winning in the 3,200-meter run, Cadence Glynn winning in the 300 hurdles, and Riley Voller winning in the discus, another multi-sport athlete there too, like you've seen. And this one, I think, takes the cake, though. Katie Mackner of Warner winning in the 200-meter run plus the long jump and the triple jump. Not too shabby for her.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Man, Mackner, you know, another multi-sport athlete, and to be able to run and jump at that level is just incredible to me. Like, and we see when we've talked to coaches in the past, like, how many times have we said, we've talked to a coach and they say, hey, we feel like you could be a good runner, but we could also see you being in the long jump or in the triple jump. And I feel like that could be a situation where Mackner, I don't know what her number one event is, but you got to think the coach or somebody said to her, hey, you can do this, this, and this, and we think you could be pretty good. And to win three events in that, and win a three events like that, pretty incredible.
Did you ever see the movie Yes Man with Jim Carrey?
It's been a while, but yes.
Yeah, same thing with me. I feel like in high school for track and field, you almost have to be a yes man. Hey, we really need you to anchor, you know, the 4x100. All right, coach, I got you.
Yep.
You got, you know, you could really be pretty good in javelin. Now, let's give it a try. Like, you almost have to be a yes man or yes girl in high school track and field if you want to take your game to the next level, right?
I completely agree. You almost have to be like, hey, I'll try it, and more times than not, you're going to see stuff like this. I guarantee you, like the javelin you mentioned, I guarantee you there weren't a lot of people coming into track to, hey, I'm a javelin thrower.
Yeah.
There's just no way. Or, hey, you know, I want to get into pole vaulting. Like, that's not your first event that you get into.
I can run fast. I can do that.
I can jump, but throwing a javelin or a discus, I don't think so. Like, somebody had to have an influence on that. So that's my big thing with these track and field. It's like, hey, I can run fast, but then you learn stuff about yourself that maybe you don't even know you could do. And that's why I think track and field is so great for these kids, because – you know, you don't think the long jump and the triple jump is going to help you on the basketball court, on the football field? You got to be crazy. It's certainly going to help you.
No doubt about it. And these coaches that push these athletes to unlock that untapped potential is pretty cool, too. High school track and field continuing with the Barker Relays. Visit our website for more details. And the Schubert Twilight there as well, as the Sisseton boys and girls would both finish in first place. Individual notes on our website, hubcityradio.com. And before we bring in Jay KleinConnect here in just a second, it is true, the Aberdeen Central ladies on the golf courses out there, they are mortal. Yes, they did not win. Can you believe it? This is like the first time since the bicentennial that Aberdeen Central did not win an event. Of course, I'm being facetious, but still a very solid event there for them as they would finish in fourth place out of 14 teams. And it was very, very competitive in the top five in particular. O'Gorman won by 3 strokes over Mitchell. O'Gorman won by 5 strokes over third place Brandon Valley. It's on page 4 there, Cobra. I can hear you shuffling the papers.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay, there you got it. See, I used to not put the page numbers on there. I'm like, where the heck was that thing? It's like, page number. There you go.
Got it.
But Central would finish in fourth place. Olivia Braun, your medalist there, a 1 over par 73, good for first place. She was two strokes ahead of second place Vanessa Smith from Brandon, a 3 over 75, Ari Jacobs of O'Gorman. Third place, a 79, a 7 over par. Chloe Vikander would finish in 10th place there for the Golden Eagles. So they still get the medalist taken care of with Olivia Braun, but I don't want to say a wake-up call, but it just goes to show you how good the action is there in AA on the girls' golf circuit. If you don't have your A game, you're going to finish in, well, fourth place.
Well, that's just it. I mean, they were runner-up in Huron, too, last week as well. And I think I read on an article that they didn't have Emma Doerr and Kylie Wireball for this event.
Okay.
So that might have something to do, obviously. They're big-time golfers. But O'Gorman and Mitchell, they've been knocking on the door. Like, O'Gorman's really had a really good year. Ari Jacobs for O'Gorman, she's been in the top three a lot, and I've just seen during the on the leaderboard, like, multiple O'Gorman golfers, multiple Mitchell golfers. I mean, how many times have we talked about Maddie Child? So they've been knocking on the door to get one, and I think this is kind of, to me, at least a three-horse race throughout the year. It's going to be O'Gorman, it's going to be Mitchell, and, of course, Aberdeen Central. But Braun, this is now 7 of 8 events that she has won this season. That's incredible. I mean, just being able to have that consistency. Like, she's not carding a 6 over.
Yeah.
It just hasn't happened yet. Like, 1 over, she'd probably say, hey, you know what? I should have been in the 60s. She shot a 68 in Huron. She's on a complete tear right. 7 of 8 tournaments this year. She's won now. That's incredible.
And to your point, I also wouldn't count out Watertown too. That may be a 4-horse race.
Yes.
They're probably like a distant, like they're kind of lurking. They're like the Scotty Scheffler. They're always just around. But yeah, to your point, Mitchell, O'Gorman, Central. But I might even throw Watertown in that mix.
Sure.
Just a little bit to be.
Gabby Olson's been great.
Yeah, no doubt. So it's been a very, very successful start to the season for the Aberdeen Central Golden Eagles. Coming up next on the show, we're going to talk with Jay KleinConnect, a little potpourri, talk some Brown County Speedway, talk some Aberdeen Wings. They, of course, were at home this last weekend. A great, great Friday night for them. Saturday, not as much. It was a very competitive game, but just could not quite get the job done there. A pivotal and crucial Game 5 is tonight. We'll talk about that and much more with JK after this. Sports Hub continues on Fox Sports Aberdeen. It's our daily sports talk show Monday through Friday between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. I'm David Tewksbury, joined alongside by the Cobra and one of the two voices of the action over there at Brown County Speedway, Jay KleinConnect, taking some time out of his Monday. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
We are living the dream over here. Absolutely. We're enjoying the weekend weather, and looks like a nice weekend ahead of us here. Of course, should be a nice weekend, hopefully Friday night there at Brown County Speedway. We'll talk a little bit of potpourri, kind of a little Brown County Speedway, some Aberdeen Wings action. I texted you on Friday night. I was like, hey, big game for the Wings here. Are you there? And you're like, no, man, I'm out at the the Speedway. You had a pretty busy weekend, huh?
Yeah, it gets like that. You know, back when I was actually traveling with the Wings and stuff too, there were times that, you know, if the championship game was on Tuesday, get home Wednesday, and Friday the races, you know, started that. You know, it was just one season goes into the next so quickly. But it works out pretty well, actually, because, you know, there's a lot of Wings fans that are race fans, and, you know, they kind of, you know.
Good crossover there.
Yes, a crossover. That was the word I was looking for. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I was at the Wings game on Friday and just kind of seeing the parking lot there at the Expo. It was pretty crazy with the racing fans and the hockey fans. And maybe what's kind of stood out to you with
the— You're going to throw the Humane Society second paw sale in there on Friday.
Oh.
That was busy,
That
too.
Was also there as well.
So there's
okay.
Three huge events. That parking lot was—
I think I parked all the way in the back. Yeah. I couldn't find my car. That's how busy it was when I got out of there. But—
Yeah, nothing to do with the soda pops during the game either.
Yeah, a couple grape juices.
That also probably could have had something to do with it. But anyway, you know, what kind of stood out to you first 2 weeks of the Brown County Speedway from your perspective?
You know, I'm a pessimist. I just am. I can't help it, all right? People call me a pessimist, and I say, no, I'm a realist. But the fact is I probably am a little bit leaning pessimist. And throughout the years that I've been doing this at Brown County Speedway, which is 26 years now, the opening night is never easy. You know, the track's got to be reworked, you know, over the course of the winter and everything. It hasn't seen the tires and hasn't taken any rubber over the course of the you know, because the composite of the soil and of the clay and everything that is used out there is, it changes as the season goes on, you know, with weather conditions and everything else. And so usually the opening night is a rough track. It's not real racy. It's not, you know, all kinds of things. I got to say, the first two nights of racing at Brown County Speedway this season have gone smooth, and it's been awfully racy. We've seen good action on the track in all classes. Crowds have been good. There's haven't been any real hangups. Hats off to the promoters and all of those involved that do the day-to-day work, because they're ready, and they it shows.
Well, I talked to Rusty, I think it was before the opener, and that's something that he stood out to him as well, just how well conditioned the track is.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the work and time. You know, we didn't have the toughest winter, but I'm sure that certainly it doesn't matter. You know, you get a little moisture there, it can really throw things for a loop.
It you know what, we say it a lot at the races, because it is something that people probably don't realize, and or maybe they realize it, but they don't think about it enough, that how much work goes into the preparation. This is not asphalt, like I always say at the racetrack. This is not, you know, a concrete surface or something. It changes all night long as the sun is going down, as the wind is picking up. You know, the sun is going down, so you're getting some direct sun on turns one and two. So it's drying out over there, but it's in the shade in three and four, so it's cooler. It's constantly a battle. You know, and oddly enough, to throw this in, you know, I talked with Kyle Oswald about with the BMX, very similar. Mm-hmm. There are portions of that BMX track that over the, you mentioned winter, if he gets a snowpack, it'll hold moisture better, he was telling me about it. And I'm like, this sounds like Brown County Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
When you have open dirt, it dries out. It doesn't soak in. And you've got to apply it and hope that it actually, you know, the pH balance and all that stuff, kind of that it actually holds and doesn't dry out. Or so there's a whole process to it. And we're going to get Bill Nye, the science guy, and a few others to, as you know, share how this process works. But ultimately, we had some great racing. The high line was there, the midline, you know, different points of the corners and of the racetrack, and the bottom is almost always there. So, you know, you have two and three wide racing when that happens. And again, that's because of track preparation.
It's kind of interesting that you mentioned Kyle Oswald, because when we had him on a couple of years ago, after a really rough winter, I mean, we had over 100 inches of snowfall. It's like, man, those racetracks got to be in really rough conditions. Like, actually, it's the exact opposite. Yep. So, to your point, I'm curious about the Legends feature. How often do that, or does that kind of roll here to Brown County Speedway? I can't recall that too often. That's that was a newer event. How often does that happen? Do you know off the top of your head?
I do know.
Okay.
This they announced back in at the banquet, I think in December or something like that, that they were going to add the Legends as a class, as you know, as a competing class, and not just for expos or for, you know, a one night only invitational, that it was going to be part of every night of racing.
Okay.
So then in January, February, they brought a guy from Mandan, North Dakota, who's instrumental in running the Legend classes up in that neck of the woods. And we see a lot of growth in this class, especially in the smaller towns in North Dakota, like, you know, the Wishick, North Dakota, and the Ypsilanti's, and those kinds of small towns. And for some reason, they're clustered, it seems. But he came down and put on kind of a seminar to, you know, answer some questions about it. And they dove in. A lot of help from the Legend group, the NX Legends class, and about how that all goes down. But, it's a every night racing event at Brown County Speedway this year. And so far, it has been really impressive because, I mean, obviously, there's not going to be huge classes of cars because it is new. So locally, we see like TJ Pfeiffer and a few others that are right from here from Aberdeen. But a large part of them are coming from the, you know, just across the border in the North Dakota and so on. But we're seeing a lot of different levels. You know, you see a 13-year-old Kaysen Becker, Chad's son, racing a Legend, 13 years old.
That's crazy.
And, you know, you look at these things and you think, oh, well, that's, you know, it's just a little go-kart or something. Well, it's small in size, but, you know, there's a lot of horsepower, a lot of CCs under the hood there, and that is a motorcycle racing engine that is very fast. The little touch of a steering wheel, and it wants to come around. The steering is so, because of the short wheelbase and everything, the steering is so sensitive in them. But what one thing that I was, again, the pessimist in me, that I was a little bit concerned about was that how late it was going to make racing action go, because we're adding a class, and this is a class of young drivers that don't have a lot of experience. We're going to see a lot of yellow flags that are going to slow things down and take away our momentum. We have not seen that happen. In fact, it's been right the absolute opposite. We're seeing these cars, when they do fishtail or to end up doing a cookie or whatever, they stay in the throttle and get right back into the race, no yellow. There was one during the feature race on Friday night where there were three cars that all kind of got tangled up for a moment, and they just kind of wobbled, and I thought, oh boy, here we go, because all three of them were shooting off the top of one and two. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, they gather it up and take off, and I look down the line at a couple of the other officials and stuff, and I'm just like, did you guys see that? And we all just smiled, thinking, if that's the way that this is going to go, we're going to go flag to flag a lot. And by that, I mean green to checkered, mm-hmm. because they do a really good job of keeping the show moving. By the drivers, but certainly the officials too. But the drivers do a good job. They don't stop and wait for a yellow to come out. They stay in the throttle and keep things moving and keep it exciting. It's been really a great addition here so far.
Do you feel like this Legends class is going to really take off and continue to grow here? I know you mentioned not as many people in it right now, or maybe not so much locally, or getting more people from outside of Aberdeen. Do you feel like that's going to grow as we move forward?
Without a doubt. It is. People want to call it an entry-level class, and I had to stop myself just there, Matt. But it is financially a little bit more of a starter class. And racing is a sport of accumulation. You have your helmet, your seat belts, and your fire suit, and all those kinds of things. They go with you to the next car you get, you know, whatever. So you, once you have those things, it takes away from expenses year in and year out. So it makes it a little bit easier to jump into a class. Now, again, financially speaking, we would consider that a feeder class or a starter class probably. But there's a level of experience that is far from a starter class or a feeder class or an entry class. There's guys out there 45, 50 years old that have been doing it for 15, 20 years, and they are very pro experienced drivers that are not. So it's a funny thing, because while it is a starter class and I do expect it to grow, on the same note, it isn't really a starter class. It's a lot trickier than you might think. Let's put it that way. But yeah, I think it's going to take off. I mean, people are already liking what they're seeing. We see great feedback on social media and stuff, which can be a real detriment sometimes.
Sure, sure.
But, and even the crowds I'm noticing are cheering more and more for the Legend drivers as they're getting to see them more and becoming more familiar with them.
What do you make of that? You mentioned like a 13-year-old driving a Legends feature. What do you make of the younger generation, kind of racing? I mean, because you think, yeah, racing, it might be an older sport or people that have been doing it for a while. But you're seeing that next generation, whether it's a kid or, a son of a racer that are getting into it. So I think that's pretty neat.
Without a doubt. Again, I'm aging myself, but I've been working out here at this racetrack for 25, 26 years. I've been a fan of racing. And of dirt track racing, particularly NASCAR and all that stuff, doesn't do a whole lot for me. But I like this because it's local, because these are people that are farmers, that are part of the community, that work for the city of Aberdeen or whatever. They're guys, that are just, some people might have a $50,000 fishing boat with all kinds of electronics and stuff on it. These guys decide they want to spend their money elsewhere with a passion that they have for racing. And it almost always gets handed down. I have never seen where a driver's family isn't involved. Does that mean one of them is going to be the next driver? Maybe, maybe not. But they are in the pits. They're changing tires. They're grabbing tear-offs. They're, filling fuel jugs. It's a family sport, without a doubt. And to your point about generational, we talk about this a lot, seeing Kurt Gelling, for example, past national champion in his heyday and so on, and you see his son now, Chase, who's 21 years old, and has been in it now 3-4 years. If, not only can you see, the very first time I saw Chase go out on what we call test and tune, which is basically a practice, I just thought, wow, that kid is, I mean, he already knows the car. He's worked on it with his dad so much and stuff that you could just tell that he was not only a great driver, great wheel man, but he could read that car better than anybody who could just jump into it. And, you know, so you could, you see that that information and the passion, all of it does get passed down. We saw it. Ken Arment's daughter, Cameron, was tried her hand at the modified class. We've seen over and over throughout the years, Pat Wisegram, his son, Thomas Wisegram, now a heavy hitter in the late model division. It's very common, and it's gone on for years and years and years. I mean, when I was a little kid living in Huron, South Dakota, at Dakota State Fair Speedway, same deal. There were, you know, dads that a couple of years later you'd see their kids or their nephew, whatever, very family oriented, and definitely it builds from that. You know, you have people that the passion, you know, is passed down.
Jay Klein Connect joining us here on FSA. Final one before we get you out of here. You were there on Saturday night along with Matt and I for the Wings game. They've got a big game 5 here tonight, Bruins and Wings. What'd you make of this weekend for the Wings and maybe a slight preview, I guess, for tonight?
Well, I'll tell you what. I, obviously, as you guys mentioned, I was not there Friday night. I was following it very closely on my phone. And I was shocked to see some of the stats, like the fact that they did not commit a single penalty on Friday night. It's just, wow. I mean, that's crazy. Great on them. They're obviously playing with a lot of discipline, if that's the case. If they can do that again, they will, you know, be successful against Austin tonight. You saw them absolutely manhandle, from what I watched in clips and what I've heard, stats basically dominate Austin. Like I said, people, did they forget to get off the bus when they pulled up to the ODA Center? What happened? Like, I couldn't believe it. And a hot hand in a goaltender with Willem Braun right now. He's doing really big things after back-to-back shutouts to Austin, who had never experienced a shutout this season. Things are rolling for the Wings right now. They're playing well. A very close matchup we saw Saturday night. I think we're going to see one heck of a game tonight. Now, it's a toss of a coin who shows up, because if the best of two teams show up, boy, we are going to be in for a treat. You know, but the travel, all that stuff get involved, that, you know, a Monday game, it's just, there's variables. And if you get off to a slow start in Austin, you're going to be in trouble. So that's going to be big on the Wings. They've got to stay out of the penalty box again. If they can do that, I think they're successful and they go on to Blaine for the Frozen Four. But if not, they'll probably see their season end at the hands of Austin here tonight, just simply because Austin has a very strong power play. Mm-hmm. And if the Wings give them opportunities to go on that power play and they've got guys sitting in the box, it's that's not going to bode well.
Going to be a great matchup tonight. 7:05 on 94.1 The Rock, and a spot in the Frozen Four on the line there. Looking forward to that here tonight. Jay, thanks for popping in studio here, and I'm sure we'll talk to you later on down the road.
Yeah, I get a little windy. I'm talking a little too much there, but as you can tell,
works in this business. Yeah.
I'm passionate about racing, and I'm passionate about hockey, so it works out well for me.
Well, a couple times during the game on Saturday, I was like nudging you. I'm like, man, you can't get better than this. Like, playoff hockey, it's 2-2. You can't beat that. It's fantastic. So maybe we'll get that elusive overtime game, because I said to you guys there rinkside, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling an overtime game here tonight.
It was looking like it for a while,
very
too.
Close, yeah. So maybe tonight, we'll see. We'll talk to you later on down the road. That's Jay Klein Connect joining us here live in studio on FSA. We'll wrap up this Monday installment of The Hub after this. Sports Hub continues for a Monday installment of it on FSA. Our thanks to Jay Klein Connect for taking some time out of his Monday schedule to join us here on the program. He's Matt McClure. I'm David Tewksbury. Pleased to be joined alongside by you, sir, or Matt, I'm the listener or viewer there on the Fox Sports Aberdeen Facebook page. A busy weekend for the Northern State track and field squads. It was the NSIC tournaments there, and a very, very solid weekend for the men and women alike. The Northern men would finish in second place collectively, while the Northern ladies would finish in fourth. A lot of school records and personal bests would go down. Visit our website, hubcityradio.com. And a big shout-out to our boy Sam Tremelling. He was officially named as the Senior of the Year there. So read that story on our website, hubcityradio.com. A lot of great stuff from the Wolves.
And we talked to Nate Davis on Wednesday, too, and he mentioned to me just how cool it is to see the amount of personal best that you see throughout a season. He just thought that was really neat, and they're doing a great job, Coach Dingman and that crew. You know, you're seeing a lot of individual results and a lot of people getting personal best, and that's what I think is so neat about the track and field.
And also the fact is you want to be seeing your personal best in mid-May.
Yes.
You know, this is like, that's great that you get them, but you want to get them when you're kind of rounding into form here. You know, you want to be seeing that in early April. And if you are, I guess good on you, but want to see continued improvement there, and job well done there for Northern State. High school softball from the weekend, Aberdeen Central, pardon me. They would have a tough weekend go about it. They would fall in a pair of games on Friday to Sioux Falls Jefferson and Sioux Falls Lincoln, 22-0 and 21-1. And then on Saturday, they would drop a pair of games there as well against Washington, 24-4 and 15-0. They're an 0-4 weekend for the Aberdeen Smitties as well. Smitties have had just kind of a tough go about it this season in terms of just getting out there. They've had no, like, consistent schedule. You know, it's like, hey, we're going today. Just kidding. Oh, here comes the rain. So it's been kind of all over the place there for them, just kind of fits and starts for their schedule.
Yeah, and they were really rounded into form. Last weekend, they won 3 of 4, and then we talked to Coach Ganelli, and he was really happy with what he saw, but then you got a week layoff.
Yeah.
I feel like if they play Tuesday or Wednesday, you're right back in the thick of things.
Oh, yeah.
You get a week off, and then you got two big games. I mean, they were battling for playoff positioning. That's kind of tough. This isn't football. You know, you got to get out and see more at bats. I thought that was tough for them.
Well, we see it all the time in Major League Baseball. A team that has that long layoff after they win a series in five games or four games.
That's a great point.
You know, they're waiting for 5, 6, 7 days sometimes, and they look a little sluggish in game one of the next series.
That is 100% fact. That has happened a lot here recently. A team that wins their division really struggles in that division series. So you're spot on that.
We're back at it on a Tuesday. Wings and Bruins tonight, 7:05 on 94.1 The Rock. We'll talk at you tomorrow.